From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of August 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. And in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will be here to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way today, we'll hear how the state statisticians in the Midwest assess crop progress and about four University of Illinois events that are scheduled for this week, starting tonight with a Will Ag Outlook panel in Tuscola at the Farm Bureau building. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. The nearby soft red winter wheat contract at 724.75. Up 12 and a quarter cents in July at 797 and three quarters, up 6.5. Hard red in Kansas City, lead option at 817.5, up 6.5. And in Minneapolis at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, spring wheat led the rally across the grains floor, up 23.5 cents on poor yield conditions at $8.96 and a quarter. That spilled over into the corn pit from Chicago, where the settlement price was $7.14 a bushel for the September, up 6.75. December at 727.5 cents, up 7.5, and the March at 740.25, up 7.25. May contract at 745, up 7.25, and July at 747.5, up 7.25 cents as well. December corn at 650.25 for next year, up 5.5 cents. September soybeans today, $13.40. The final trade on a Tuesday afternoon, 3.5 cents lower. November, 1349.5, down 1.75 cents. January at 1360.25, 2 cents lower. The March at 1366.75, down 2.25. And November of next year at $13.18.5, 1.25 cents lower. Bean meal futures down 70 cents. Bean oil futures down 9 cents for the day. Mercantile Exchange live cattle futures finished the October contract, at 127.5, 7.5 cents higher. December there at 121.17.5, down 32.5. August feeders at 135.57.5, 7.5 lower. September down 30 at 137.37.5, and October lean hogs at $89.40, 57.5 cents lower. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil, September contract, $86.66 a barrel, down $1.22. September ethanol at $2.79.7, 0.2 cents higher. Natural gas at $3.94, 8.4 cents lower, $3.94 again. And September heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $2.93.5, just about 0.8 cents lower for the day. August gold futures at $1,782.40 an ounce, finished $26.90 higher. And the Dow now down just about 120 points at 11,363. The dollar at 74 even, down 0.17, rather up 0.17. And the CRB index at 330.19, down 0.33 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area from the National Weather Service says the skies today will be mostly sunny. A high of 84 degrees, southeast winds at about 3 to 5 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 61 degrees. Tomorrow, a 40% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Should be partly sunny, a high near 85 degrees. South-southwest winds tomorrow between 6 and 8 miles an hour. Tomorrow night, a 30% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Those all come before 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy, a low around 64 degrees. And then on Thursday, mostly sunny skies. A high near 85, north-northeast winds at 3 to 5 miles an hour. Thursday night, mostly clear, a low of 62. Friday, sunny and a high of 87. Friday night, clear and a low of 64. Saturday, sunny and a high of 87 again. And then Saturday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a low of 68 degrees. By the time we get to Sunday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms will continue. Then it'll turn partly sunny with a high near 84 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour and we talk with Don Day of Day Weather.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check in on the futures markets. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana is with us today. Hi, Wayne. How are you?
Why, good afternoon, Todd. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and that is probably making farmers feel better, but I don't know that it's doing a whole lot for their crops at the moment. They could use a drink, I suppose.
They could use a drink, and, you know, we've heard of a little bit of course, everybody's heard of the disaster over at the State Fair on Saturday night, but there was also disaster out in a lot of the cornfields around here, and we're hearing a lot of corn that was broke off with the strong winds on Saturday evening.
So tell me a bit more about that and what kind of things you're hearing from producers that are calling in.
Well, you know, we've had a lot of our crop insurance customers that have called in. They had some wind, some a very small amount and some a very substantial amount. And we get down in the Greencastle area down in there that there was some areas that might have been damaged as much as 20% of their crop might have been broke off during the high winds that come on that line that went over and hit Indianapolis at the State Fair.
So let's talk about the crop that's in the field at this point. The weather's been a bit cooler. We have had some rainfall, but it's been spotty, I think, at best. Has the soybean crop gotten enough of drink to begin to feel a bit better and to start filling out some pods?
You know, the plants look tremendous, but we could sure use another couple of very good rains to help fill the pods that are on these plants. All the pods are pretty flat right yet, Todd, and we all know that we need some moisture to fill them. We did get about 6/10 of an inch of rain there Saturday evening, and that was a great help. And, you know, like I say, but the one thing that we do need is a few more to help us there. We'd like to see a few more rains just for our corn crop, hopefully to hold the production we have right now, not to abort any more kernels, and to maybe add some test weight or a little bit of filling to the corn that hasn't started to dent yet.
The Minneapolis Grain Exchange spring wheat futures rallied sharply today on idea that yields of that particular crop haven't been so good. Is that just forcing others to think about what the corn and soybean yields across the Midwest might be in the next month?
Well, I think, you know, it's a two-edged sword. Number one, it makes us think if the wheat didn't do well, maybe the corn and beans aren't doing well. And number two, wheat is a substitution for corn as far as the feed grain goes. And, of course, sorghum is growing a lot in some of those same areas, and that's a replacement for corn. And it's not as easy to switch to something you don't have a supply of.
You know, we don't often think of the whole complex as the coarse grain complex, but all of those are coarse grains, and they do work into the supply of feed that's available for livestock and other uses across the Midwest and the globe. So tell me what you're hearing from Chicago today about the futures market.
Well, I think, of course, we started off the day the outside markets being the pressure point today because we didn't have a lot of new news as far as things went, but we sort of moved past that. You know, some of our more prevalent weather forecasters calling for a little more moisture. That's why the beans stayed under a little bit of pressure, Todd, because we do feel that they have a much better chance of improving with moisture. But as we continue to hear more and more yield checks out there, different farm bureaus, different groups, different farm groups going out, they're below what the government even said on the last time. And then, of course, the FSA kicking out the numbers of what they thought was the planted acres for the crop insurance program. Not totally accurate as in the past, but looks like there'd be some decreases in planted acres in corn, beans, and wheat, and that helped, of course, to rally the wheat market first because there was a good decrease there, and then bled over into the corn also as we went along. So that was another thing that added into a little strength in the markets today.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Over the next couple of weeks, we'll be very busy here at willag.org. Some things that are happening this week. Tonight in Tuscola, Dave Dickey and Company will be at the Farm Bureau building there in Douglas County with Jackie Vakes and Bill Mayer and Kurt Kimmel and Chuck Shelby for a 6:45 Ag Outlook panel. Tomorrow, I'll be in Shelbyville at the Lions Club along with Daryl Good, Pete Manhart, and Matt Bennett. That's at 7 o'clock, another Ag Outlook meeting. And then in El Paso on a Thursday evening of this week, Dave will be there with Jackie Bakes, Mike Zuzulo, and Kurt Kimmel. And next week, I'll be in Decatur at the County Extension Building with Matt Bennett, Paul Cooley, and Jackie Vakes. Those are all Ag Outlook panels that are scheduled over the next several days. You can catch them at willag.org. Starting next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in the pre-opening market report and the closing market report, both can be found online. We'll be talking with the Eastern and the Western Leg folks of the Midwestern Pro Farmer Crop Tour each and every day. And then Chip Flory will be our guest on Commodity Week. So we have lots of things happening here at willag.org. Don't forget also that this Thursday is Agronomy Day right here on campus. That's at 7 a.m. this Thursday morning, and I'll be sending the rack wagons in the fields of the South Farms. You'll be able to ask questions of the scientists and researchers that are doing research on your behalf. It's all part of the University of Illinois Agricultural Programming. Yesterday's crop progress report put just 14% of the nation's corn crop in the excellent category for condition. That's way off last year's number, which was 23% at this same time. The good category for corn is the same as last year and one percentage point better than last week. 98% of the crop is silked. 52% is in the dough stage. That's 6 points behind the rolling five-year average. And 17% of the corn crop has dented, also behind the five-year average, down 4 points. 94% of the soybean crop has bloomed across the nation. It's on pace with the average, but the setting pods number is behind by 8 points at 70%. The bean crop, like the corn, is lagging behind last year in the excellent category at 13% compared to 19%. The good category is 48% for the condition rating. That's the same as this time last year. Now, here are the state statisticians with updates from their regions.
This is Nick Schauer, Deputy Director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending August 14, 2011. Iowa saw cooler than normal temperatures during the week. Statewide temperatures for the week averaged 2.8 degrees below normal. Temperatures range from highs in the 90s on Monday and Tuesday to a low of 46 degrees at Sibley on Wednesday. Dry weather did continue during the week, with only a few areas in northeast, east central, and southwest Iowa receiving more than 1 inch of rain. Statewide average precipitation for the week was 0.43 inches compared with the weekly normal 0.97 inches. Areas of east central Iowa reported large hail and high winds on Monday afternoon. There were 6.4 days suitable for field work in Iowa during the week, with southwest Iowa trailing the rest of the state with only 5.6 days suitable. Topsoil moisture levels continued to decline, with 46% now rated short to very short. Northwest, north central, south central, and southeast Iowa now have 50% or more of the topsoil rated short to very short. All districts now have at least 96% of their corn tasseling and silking. 86% of the crop has reached the milk stage, 19 points more than last week and 7 percentage points ahead of the five-year average. 13% of the corn crop has reached the dent stage, behind last year's 24% but equal to the five-year average. Corn condition is reported at 67% good to excellent, down 6 points from last week. 97% of the soybean crop is blooming, slightly behind last year but equal to the five-year average. Pods are setting on 84% of the crop, behind both last year and the five-year average. Soybean condition is reported at 70% good to excellent, down 5 points from last week. This is Nick Schauer reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Illinois Field Office. Slightly cooler weather and scattered showers across much of the state made for a favorable growing week and was a welcome change from the hot and dry conditions experienced throughout the summer thus far. Statewide temperatures averaged 72.5 degrees this week, 1.2 degrees below normal. The northern portion of the state experienced slightly above normal rainfall. However, statewide precipitation was nearly 2/10 of an inch below average, ending the week at 65/100 of an inch, total accumulation. Growing degree day units since May 1 ended the week at 2,326, and this total was ahead of the historic average by 169 units, or 7%. Statewide, corn in the dough stage advanced to 74%, compared to 87% last year and 72% for the five-year average. 30% of the crop was reported dented, compared to 48% 1 year ago and 29% for the five-year average. 2% of the crop was reported mature, the same as 1 year ago and the five-year average. Overall, the corn crop was rated in 50% good or excellent condition, unchanged from last week. Soybean blooming progress ended the week at 92%, and this compares to 97% last year and 94% for the five-year average. 75% of soybeans were reported setting pods, compared to 83% a year ago and 76% for the five-year average. Overall, the soybean crop was rated in 57% good or excellent condition, unchanged from last week. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service with a crop weather report for the week ending August 14, 2011. A week with below normal temperatures and above normal precipitation brought some relief to the high heat and humidity that made for challenging growing conditions. Storms that brought high winds, hail, and heavy rain caused damage to crops and property in isolated locations. Irrigation was slowed by the rains, and fungicide and insecticide applications occurred where needed. Preparation for wheat seeding had begun in the west, while grasshopper numbers were still a concern. Corn conditions rated 75% good to excellent, with over half of the corn crop in the dough stage. Dent stage was at 10%. Soybean conditions rated 78% good to excellent. Soybeans blooming were 94% behind 98 average, and soybean setting pods were 72% behind 84 average. The third cutting of alfalfa was halfway completed. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending August 14, 2011. Weekend rains across the state ended an otherwise dry week. For the week ending August 14th, 5.8 days were rated suitable for fieldwork, the second highest of the season. Top soil moisture supplies were rated 17% surplus, compared to 24% last week. Reporters noted the need for rain in southern areas of the state, while wet conditions persisted in the northwestern and central areas. Precipitation was reported at every station. However, amounts were below average statewide, except for the North Central District, which received 0.5 inches above normal precipitation. The statewide average temperature was 1.5 degrees cooler than normal, a departure from the hot conditions prevalent in earlier weeks. Producers continue to scout for soybean aphids and spray when necessary. 73% of the corn was in the milk stage, moving closer to the five-year average of 76%. 27% of the corn was in the dough stage and 2% was in the dent stage, compared to 6% last year and 8% for the average. Corn conditions ratings were nearly unchanged from the previous week. Soybeans blooming were estimated at 93% and 70% were setting pods. That compares to 90% last week and 85% for the average. The soybean condition ratings improved slightly from the previous week. That's the weekly crop weather report for the week ending August 14th, 2011. I'm Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS, Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana. Scattered thunderstorms brought cooler temperatures, giving much-needed relief to crop and livestock farmers. The crops and pastures that received rain quickly greened up, but areas that missed the precipitation saw crop condition declines. The rainfall was not enough to improve the soil moisture reading statewide, and the soybean crop continues to need significant rain during the critical pods filling stage of development. 98% of the corn crop has silt, compared to 99% for last year and 97% for the five-year average. 48% of the corn crop is in dough, compared to 78% for last year and 60% for the five-year average. 6% of the crop is in the dense stage, compared to 36% for last year and 18% for the five-year average. Corn condition for the week declined from last week again and was rated at 39% good to excellent, compared to 60% for last year at this time. 90% of the soybean acreage is blooming, compared to 97% for last year and 93% for the five-year average. 59% of the soybean acreage is setting pods, compared to 82% for last year and 68% for the five-year average. Soybean condition for the week was rated at 47% good to excellent, compared to 59% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Up next, corn farmers in the Midwest are finding a high plains disease in their crop more often this year than in the past. I'll have more on Goss's wilt and the research plots at the University of Illinois. Goss's wilt has drifted slowly across the northern part of the Corn Belt. Farmers in Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois have steadily been reporting more and more of the disease in their fields over the last several years. It originated in the High Plains states, that's Nebraska and westward. Here's what the disease looks like on the corn plant, as explained by University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley.
Even though it's called Goss's wilt, what we typically see first are some of the leaf blight, phase of the disease, which is causes lesions with wavy margins. Within those lesions, we might see what we call freckles, which would just be dark spots, black to dark green spots in those. And then on the margins of the leaves as well, or the margins of the lesions, we'll see some water soaking, kind of a water soaking appearance. And we may see the bacteria actually oozing out in those lesions. If you look at it correctly in the sunlight, you may see kind of a shimmer to those lesions, which would indicate it might be Goss's wilt.
Now, the disease is found on the leaves of the corn plant. Bradley says if the pathogen happens to go systemic in the plant, it causes the whole thing to wilt and then die prematurely. It is a bacterial disease, so it needs an open wound to enter the plant. These can be caused by a hail or a high wind. There aren't really any rescue treatments to apply to a field when it is infected by Goss's wilt, but there are some management practices that should be used once a field has been infected. These include fall tillage, crop rotation, and using Goss's wilt-resistant corn hybrids the next time the field is planted to corn. That's where the University of Illinois research comes into play.
This is a trial that Snook Paddocky here at the University of Illinois and I initiated this year. We have about 1,200 different inbred lines out here. So these are not hybrids. You'll notice that they're much shorter and they're not as vigorous as hybrid corn would be. But we're just looking for evaluating these different genotypes for resistance to Goss's wilt. And we are finding a pretty large range of differences. We have some material out there that's very susceptible. And some material looks encouraging. Some material looks like it may have a high level of resistance. We'll have to continue this project to confirm some of these findings.
And once those confirmations come, then the University of Illinois research will be released to corn breeders for use in their programs. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Hey, you can catch up with Carl Bradley this Thursday at Agronomy Day right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. It kicks off at 7 a.m. in the morning. I'll be dispatching the rack wagons into the fields. The South Farms are just to the east of the Assembly Hall on St. Mary's Road, and those wagons will go out into the fields through about noon. There are four different tours, so come early to catch them all. Each one takes just about an hour. Back in just a couple of minutes for a few of our radio stations. We'll say goodbye now. I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Rum Day. The origins of rum date back to antiquity. Fermented drinks produced from sugarcane may have first occurred in either ancient India or China. The first distillation of rum took place on sugarcane plantations in the Caribbean in the 17th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1888, John Pemberton died. Pemberton was the pharmacist who invented Coca-Cola in 1885. At first, it was a tonic, French wine cola. Later, he modified the formula by omitting the alcohol and adding other vegetable essences. The new syrup was meant to be a cure for headaches. Pemberton sold the recipe, equipment, and machinery to manufacture the drink for just $1,200. In 1899, Robert Bunsen died. A German chemist, he discovered each element emits a light of characteristic wavelength. He also made a number of improvements in chemical batteries. In 1904, Wendell Stanley was born. A Spanish-American biochemist, he shared the 1946 Nobel Prize for Chemistry for his work in the purification and crystallization of viruses. And in 1973, Selman Waksman died, an American biochemist. He was one of the world's foremost authorities on soil microbiology. He discovered the antibiotic streptomycin, the first specific antibiotic effective against tuberculosis. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming is here to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. Don, tell me about it and tell me that it's good.
Well, it depends, I guess, on where you're interested in the most. But I tell you, from what we're seeing as we go through the second half of this month, conditions are going to be pretty darn close to normal. We're not seeing the excessive heat that we had in July into the early part of this month. The overall trend is going to be for conditions over a good portion of the U.S. to have near normal temperatures, even at times slightly below normal temperatures in the Midwest and Corn Belt for the next week to 10 days. So we're not seeing the heat that we had in July. And when it comes to precipitation, well, it looks like that's going to be trending about, well, where it should be. We're going to have near average amounts of precipitation over most of the Corn Belt, most of the Midwest. We're still going to be concerned about some real dry conditions in the southern plains, as those areas not going to see much relief.
Take us out of the United States, check the other growing regions around the planet, especially China, and then on the southern hemisphere and how they're setting up for their planting season, which is maybe a couple of months off, but we're getting closer.
China looks to be looking wet, mostly in the central and northern growing areas. There will be some dryness and a little bit of heat in some of the southern, east, central, and southeast areas of China. So it's a little bit of a 50-50 situation in China. There's going to be some real warm, dry areas, but also at least the central and northern areas and the western areas are going to have near normal precipitation. Now, on the other side of the globe, believe it or not, already thinking about planting season down there, well, there's been many areas of the southern hemisphere that have been pretty cool. We saw some record cold in Australia here over the last couple of days. We're expecting temperatures over many parts of the southern hemisphere to be much colder than normal, not only Australia, but South America as well, along with the conditions that are actually fairly dry. The precipitation is going to be rather spotty in South America, so they're starting off a little bit on the cool and a little bit of the dry side.
Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. A few things to remind you of before I let you go for the day. Agronomy Day is this Thursday, starts at 7 a.m. in the morning, Central Time. Come to the South Farms just to the east of the Assembly Hall on St. Mary's Road, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. I'll be sending the rack wagons into the field every hour at 7 a.m., actually more often than every hour, about every 10 or 15 minutes. All morning long, you'll be able to talk to the faculty members that have been working on your behalf this growing season. Don't forget also that tonight, Dave Dickey will be in Tuscola at the Douglas County Farm Bureau building, along with Jackie Vakes, Bill Mayer, Kurt Kimmel, and Chuck Shelby. 6 o'clock for the dinner, 6:45 for the Ag Outlook meeting. That one, of course, is free for the Outlook meeting, as all of the WILL Ag Outlook meetings are. Tomorrow night, I'll be at the Lions Club in Shelbyville. Again, we'll have a 6 o'clock dinner, a 7 o'clock Ag Outlook meeting. On that panel, Daryl Good, Pete Manhart, and Matt Bennett. That one sponsored by the Shelby County State Bank. And then on Thursday evening, the 18th, Dave will be in El Paso at the Golf Course Clubhouse, sponsored by Heartland Bank and Trust and the El Paso Grainland Co-op. Jackie Vakes, Mike Zuzulo, and Kurt Kimmel will be on the panel. So we'll be busy this week on Tuesday, that's tonight, Wednesday, and Thursday night. And then again, next Tuesday evening, we'll be in Decatur at the Macon County Extension Office. Matt Bennett, Paul Cooley, Kurt Kimmel, and Jackie Vakes. More details later on that WILL Ag Outlook panel. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.